Chapter 39. A Ghost from the Past. O blessed daughter of Zion, I am with thee, and none shall take my words out of thy lips. I will not suffer another messenger to go before thee. Revelation of Mary Baker Eddy, 1883. It seemed that the malpractitioners were never inactive. While they were plotting new attacks early in 1883, Mrs. Eddy was warned in a vision of the coming storm. Nearly two decades earlier, Mrs. Eddy, then Patterson, had met Miss Emma Ware in Portland, Maine. Emma and her sister had both been devoted to Dr. Quimby and had acted as amanuensis, assisting with syntax and orthography. Following his death, his writings had been left in their care. Now at 3 o'clock on the morning of February 7th, Miss Ware appeared to Mrs. Eddy in a vision, followed therein by Ahrens, in the form of a gorilla. Wednesday morn, 3 o'clock. Emma Ware saw a woman in a crowd, whispering, and when she came near me, seemed to be friendly, but was two-faced. Seemed to be influencing the people against me. Afterward, saw a gorilla, Ahrens, who came to me as I was lying down, and when I tried to get up, he would push me down again, and my limbs seemed bound, that I could not stir. When I tried to speak, he would put his huge paw over my mouth and stop me. Since Kennedy's first reversal of metaphysical science, he had endeavored to discredit his teacher by attributing her discovery to Quimby. Eventually, Mrs. Eddy learned this, even though Kennedy was always clandestine, remaining in the background, as he had in the conspiracy to murder plot. She suspected that he might have contacted the Ware sisters, one of whom had since married and moved to Scotland, in the summer of 1871, when he, quote, took a fit to go to Portland, end quote. When George Choate was in that city practicing Christian Science in March of 1880, his teacher wrote him regarding Emma Ware. Get her that was E.W., now in Scotland, word to look out for K.'s mesmeric control, that he will try on her to make her yield to his wishes, and another measure that he will take, and that is to get it through a third party into his hands. Probably it was the Quimby manuscript, the collection of Quimby's writings, many of which were in Mrs. Patterson's handwriting, and some of which were of Mrs. Patterson's composition, either partially or totally. The danger she had foreseen in 1880 did transpire at a later date, causing Mrs. Eddy to write, quotations have been published, purporting to be Dr. Quimby's own words, which were written while I was his patient, in Portland, and holding conversations with him on my views of mental therapeutics. Some words in those quotations certainly read like the words I said to him, and which I, at his request, had added to his copy when I corrected it. Several students had been influenced by Kennedy to stir up Quimby's ashes, but little had come of it prior to 1882. Sometime in that year, Julius Dresser entered the scene and fanned the flames of Ahrens' hatred. In the fall of 1882, Ahrens had written to Emma Ware. Her response of October 2nd read in part, I remember Mrs. Patterson as a patient of Dr. Quimby, and as a bright, clever lady who took an interest in his theory. I devoted myself to his instruction as long as he lived, but I never learned the art of healing. Dresser and his wife came to Boston from the West because of the success of Christian Science. But instead of seeking out their former friend, they went to her enemy, the mental murderer, Edward J. Ahrens. They studied with Ahrens, moved into his house, and opened offices there as practitioners of his version of Christian Science. On the 8th of February, a lengthy letter by Dresser appeared in the Boston Post, signed A.O., Ahrens and others, which gave great praise to Quimby and criticism of, quote, some parties healing through a mental method, which they claim to have discovered, end quote. The third edition of Science and Health stated, quote, the mist that went up from the ground, alias the darkness of supposition, would take the explanation of God and man out of the hands of science and give it to a material sense, end quote. This was the danger facing the revelator, the attempt to take the revelation away from God and credit it to a mortal man. Probably Mrs. Eddy's vision of a few days later was a reminder that Richard Kennedy was still the instigator of all the plots against her. Vision of February 12th. Saw Kennedy in prosperity, surrounded by his friends, and myself a mere skeleton, wasted with consumption, and said he, quote, you have done this, end quote. And he and his friends laughed at me. 2 days later, Mrs. Eddy introduced the subject of this latest attack on her discovery to the Christian Scientist Association, endeavoring to warn them of the coming storm. Their minutes of February 14th read, there is a tidal wave coming. It is to be an attempt to wrest from me the fact of the origin of Christian Science and place it upon a mesmeric basis, giving to a former mesmerist the honor, thus endeavoring to get onto a Christian platform. But this tidal wave need not harm us, although it is an awful responsibility to me. I give a great deal of time in the long hours of the night to study my duty and how to carry it out. A few days later, Mrs. Eddy answered Dresser's letter in the columns of the Boston Post. This was followed by a second letter on each side. Midst the controversy, her students glided on serenely, oblivious of the storm clouds, as is seen in Janet Coleman's recollection of this period. We were very fortunate, those who lived here in Boston, when I first studied. Our beloved leader met with us once a week in a students' meeting. We would bring up our cases, and she would show us how to treat them. She lectured and preached to us. She mothered us so kindly. It was such a wonder to us, at the lectures she gave, to see the learned men of all denominations, Catholic and all, ply her with questions, and I heard two priests say after talking with her for a long time that they had never met her equal. They would not get the best of her. When she was asked a question from the Bible, no matter where it was, she would lift up her eyes for a moment, and the answer would come as clear and true, and those who had the slightest understanding of truth would understand it. Her days were given to her students and numerous activities of the cause. But the leader's thoughts in the long hours of the night dwelt upon her responsibility for protecting the spiritual origin of the science of man. She knew now what she had not known in the early days of her practice, that is, that the metaphysical system which she had attributed to Quimby was in reality a combination of his ideas with her own. The line of demarcation came in February 1866, when the Christ consciousness raised her from her deathbed. The magnitude of that event, which had not been seen at the time, grew clearer with every upward step. Mary's work truly began not in Warren in 1864, but where Jesus left off. Quote, "His 3 days' work in the sepulcher set the seal of eternity on time. He proved life to be deathless, and love to be the master of hate." End quote. He said to Mary, the first to see him, quote, "Touch me not, for I am not yet ascended to my Father." End quote. His most important instructions came after his resurrection, but his disciples were able to follow him but a short distance, to comprehend but little, and he was soon out of their sight. In 1866, Mary Patterson had been ready to follow the Christ higher and to lead the thought of the world above its former self-imposed limitations, for she, too, had experienced resurrection. In her words, "The accident occurred in the evening, on our way to a temperance meeting, and we were taken to our home on a bed the next morning and rose from it on the third day. A dear old lady asked me, 'How is it that you were restored to us? Has Christ come again on earth?' 'Christ never left,' I replied. 'Christ is truth, and truth is always here, the impersonal Savior.' Then another person, more material, met me, and I said in the words of my master, 'Touch me not.' I shuddered at her material approach. Then my heart went out to God, and I found the open door from this sepulcher of matter. In the 17 years since her great awakening, much had transpired. The sins of Richard Kennedy had caused her to see that Quimby's methods were really mesmerism, practiced from a humanitarian standpoint. Mesmerism does not emanate from the science of being, and it cannot be practiced scientifically. Everything scientific is based upon one absolute principle and is demonstrable as in mathematics. Mesmerism, like witchcraft, is a denial of one absolute principle with the supposition that everything can be reversed." Richard Kennedy's conscious wicked reversal of the discoverer's teachings had forced her to eliminate every vestige of Quimby's theory and methods from her science. Now the very element that she had had to purge from her teachings was coming back to claim Christian science as its own. Mesmerism or hypnotism seems to heal the sick, but such healing is subject to relapse, because the basis of these isms is duality. Quimby had not learned this and was endeavoring to do that which many hypnotists are attempting today, i.e., to separate the good practice from the evil practice, the constructive from the destructive, and to apply the good only. Those who are honestly endeavoring to practice white magic and to repudiate black magic will learn that the two are one and cannot be separated, because the basis of ancient and modern witchcraft, or necromancy, alias mesmerism and hypnotism, is duality. Duality is the belief in two powers, opposite and equal, and forever warring. In her association with Quimby, Mrs. Eddy had learned somewhat of the power of the human mind to accomplish good. From her experience with Richard Kennedy, she had learned of the human mind's power to accomplish evil. She had suffered greatly from Kennedy's attacks and reversal of her teachings. Each severe experience had turned her to the reality of one power only, and planted her feet more firmly upon the one principle of existence. Every sharp attack had caused her to cast herself unreservedly upon the omnipotence of good, with an ensuing elevation into a diviner atmosphere where human will cannot enter and could not harm her. In her ignorance, Mary Patterson had told Dr. Quimby that the science of mind was back of his treatment. In her reminiscences, she wrote, "In his conversations with me and in his scribblings, the word science was not used at all, till one day I declared to him that back of his magnetic treatment and manipulation of patients, there was a science, and it was the science of mind." She had believed this at the time, but she had since learned better. The human mind, good or bad, has no more bearing on the science of mind than the Ptolemaic theory that the earth was the center of the universe had on the science of astronomy. Copernicus, the father of modern astronomy, was able to refute the latter belief. The refutation of the former rested on the shoulders of the mother of Christian Science. The world which had resisted Copernicus's discovery of astronomical law and order was now resisting her discovery of ontological law and order. Even her own students were healing more by faith than understanding. If they could review her experiences as she was now doing, they could not be misled by all the attacks against her and the attempts to obscure the science of man. She should have kept a record of her experiences and discoveries for a posterity which would have greater comprehension after her work had leavened the thought. She should have kept a journal of the history of Christian Science, but that history was still in the making. She would begin the record now.